Welcome to Parshas Shlach, 5766. Page 798 in the Chumash. This is the famous story of the spies, the Meraglim. The spies that were sent by Moshe Rabbeinu to the land of Israel as the Jewish people were in the desert, had left Har Sinai, and they were en route to get to their destination of the land of Israel. And Moshe Rabbeinu, as it appears from the simple narrative, is told by Hashem to send out men to do a search, to do an initial viewing of the land, of the people, strategic points, and ways that they can enter and take possession of the land. Now, the famous story, I'm sure that people are familiar with it, that the 12 men, who are all described by the Torah as great men, went into the land. They came back after 40 days, and all but two of them had a disparaging report. To read some of their words, they came back with great big fruits. They came back with a report that the cities were powerful, that the people were like giants, that there were strong nations that lived there, the various regions of the land. The Hanashim Asher Alu Imo, in verse 31, Amru, the people that ascended with him said, Lo nuchal la'alos el ha'am. We cannot ascend to that people. Ki chazok hu mimenu. For it is too strong for us. We cannot do it. Now, I mentioned 10. There were two that did not have a disparaging report. In fact, one of the two is Kalev from the tribe of Ephraim. And it says in verse 30, Vayas Kalev Esa'om el Moshe, Vayomer Olo Na'ale V'yorashnu Osa Ki Yachol Nuchala. Kalev silenced the people towards Moshe and said, We shall surely ascend and conquer it, for we can surely do it. So there's like a debate. 10 say we can't. 2 say Yehoshua was the other one, Joshua. 2 say we can. What was the public opinion? Vatisa kol ho'eda, vayitnu es kolam, vayivku ha'am balaylo hahu. The entire assembly raised up and issued its voice. The people wept that night. Vayulonu al Moshe v'al Aharon kol b'nei Yisroel. Vayomru aleihem kol ho'eda, lumasnu bi'eretz Mitzrayim o b'midbar hazeh, lumasnu. All the children of Israel murmured against Moshe and Aaron. And the entire assembly said to them, If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness. Why is Hashem bringing us to this land to die by the sword? Our wives and young children will be taken captive. Is it not better for us to return to Egypt? So the people were taken by the 10. It says the entire assembly cried. They were heartbroken. They were scared. They were disparaged. So the title of our class that went out on the email was, What Are We Afraid Of? I think that was the words that we used. So I would like to continue our theme, which we have begun, with the Book of Bamidbar, and particularly refer to words that were spoken last week in the Parsha of Behaloscha when the complaining began. And the Jewish people then complained of the unknown, of being in the wilderness, not knowing exactly what their destination would be, not sure of water or food, being discontented with the manna, remembering again the similar type of words. We remember how it was in Egypt, how good it was, even though it wasn't so good. It was better than this. And we spoke about this idea of complaining. We referred to the words of the Stipler Gaon of blessed memory, who passed away in the 80s, one of the leading rabbinic figures of our generation. And he said that there's basically two types of life that Hashem offers the Jewish people. The first type is a life of miracle, Hanhaga Nisis, where Hashem takes care of everything for us. That's the kind of life that he offered us in the desert, where he provided the clouds for protection, he provided the manna, he provided the water. And with that comes a very highly charged responsibility, and that is that we adhere to everything from A to Z, because Hashem is so close, is so apparent, is so revealed, and we are so sure of His presence constantly that we had better not make a mistake. And that is why the results, the consequences of all of the, what we'll call sins, even though we probably wouldn't recognize the sins of that generation as sins, they were all met with a very harsh consequence. Death, plague, burning, etc. Because it's like living, like working as a lineman, working with the high voltage wires. The other life that Hashem offers us is the life of Hanhaga Tivis, a life with the natural approach, where Hashem hides Himself a little more. He allows us to act in ways which we normally call natural, in commerce, in agriculture, and yes, in times in military. That creates more of a responsibility of us to make choices, to sense Hashem's presence, even though it's not revealed. There is a little bit more flexibility there, a little bit more mercy in that type of environment, because it is harder to find Hashem. The second approach was Hashem's plan for us. The purpose of being in the desert was only to fill up on the knowledge of Hashem's power, Hashem's involvement, and then to go into the land and live in a natural approach. In the natural approach, Hashem is also there, but Hashem is hidden more. And He expects us to play more of an active role and to, at the same time, find Him behind the scenes. It's a much more challenging life, in a sense. The rewards are greater. So here's my philosophical problem with the Jewish people as we read Parshas Shalach. They apparently don't want to go to the land of Israel. I'm going to interpret that based on the background of the Stipla Gaon, that that means that they did not want to enter into the Hanhaga Tivis. They did not want to enter into the life which was couched, which was masked in nature, because they realized the great danger, they realized the great challenge in facing these ordeals, in having to face the military, in having to conquer a land which was already inhabited by great nations. That was very daunting. In a sense, they would rather stay in the cocoon, if you will, of the desert of the clouds of glory, and be fed by the manna. That would be much more safe and secure. So we can understand where they're coming from. It would be like sending a little child off to school for the first time, or off to day camp for the first time. It's daunting to go out into the big world. However, the dilemma that we have is that the Jewish people weren't so happy in the desert either. We just read last week that when they had the opportunity to travel, they ran away from Mount Sinai like a child who's running out of school and wants to go and run and play. In other words, they wanted to be more out in the open. They didn't want to be tied down to Mount Sinai and having the Shekhinah, the divine presence, weighing down upon them. Because as we said, it's a much more highly intensified environment. So what do they want? This is my question. What do they want? Do they want to be close to Hashem? Do they want Hashem to provide, but to create this highly charged, highly flammable, combustible proximity to Him where every move is going to be discerned and possibly be a fatal error? Or do they want to go out and be a little bit more independent and face the world, but deal with military, deal with conquest, deal with making a parnasa, dealing with finding food and water on their own? Which one do they want? Do they want to have everything? Do they want to have the total protection of the Hanhaga Nisis, of the miraculous existence, with the freedom, with the individuality, with the flexibility of the Hanhaga Tivis? Which one do they want? Can you have it both ways? Can you have your cake and eat it too? I don't know the answer to this question. But I read something this week. I learned something from one of my favorite Sefarim, the Thinking Jewish Teenager's Guide to Life. Rabbi Akiva Tatz enlightens us with some of the tough issues, some of the core issues. And he speaks about ordeals. He speaks about going through ordeals in life. Hard times. Tough times. And he speaks about the concept of a nisayon, of a test. And he says, what is a test? The word nisayon means to be tested, but also it has the word nes. Nes is miracle. And what is the purpose of a nisayon? It is stated by Rabbi Luzzatto that really our occupation in life, in this world, Olam Hazeh, is to meet and to overcome nisyonos, challenges. That is our primary occupation in life. Because this is not the end-all and the be-all of our existence. There is a world to come. The way that we will reach the world to come is by meeting and overcoming our nisyonos. So what is the purpose of a nisayon, since we're involved in it so much? Nisyonos can take so many different forms. It can take the forms of challenges in relationships. It can take the forms of challenges in financial matters. It can take the form of challenges in health. It can take the form of challenges in loss. And everything that we are challenged with, that's a nisayon. Jewish tradition teaches that it's from Hashem. He's giving it to us because He wants something from us. What is that that we are supposed to become through the nisayon? And also, what is the idea of nes? Miracle. The way that this is normally answered, this is probably the way that it is addressed in the art scroll Chumash, in Parshas Vayera, where it says Hashem tested Abraham with the commandment to bind his son on the altar. Velukim nisoes Abraham. God tested Abraham. What is the purpose of a test? So the way that is normally explained is that everybody has qualities and abilities that they know about, and qualities and abilities that they don't know about. If we live a very calm, serene life, we are going to use some of our qualities, some of our abilities, but we may never be challenged to use some of our hidden abilities. Rabbi Tatz describes this with a mashal, with a parable. It's about a bull, actually. Parable. Let me read to you the mashal. Let us explore the idea of a nisayon. You have two levels of greatness within, one of which you are aware, and one much higher than you realize. Under normal circumstances, you can reach only the lesser of these, but under the stress of an ordeal, you will reach the higher one. To make this clear, imagine the following experience. You are standing in an open field. You are practicing leaping over obstacles. You wish to jump as high as possible. You want to go to the Olympics. After much practice, you discover the highest object you can clear. You try many times, but you cannot leap any higher. No matter how much effort and determination you apply, that is the highest object over which you can jump. Now, while you are standing there, gathering your strength for another attempt to better your record, you hear something behind you. You turn and see a large, enraged bull racing across the field directly towards you, nostrils flaring, head down, lethally sharp horns, unmistakably aimed at you. What do? You run. You run towards the fence that surrounds the field, seconds ahead of the danger. You sail gracefully over the fence, drop, shaking to the ground on the safe side. As you steady yourself and try to avoid thinking about what would have happened had you been 2 seconds slower, you notice that the fence over which you leapt so effortlessly is much higher than the obstacle you had been trying unsuccessfully to clear before the wild bull appeared. You have far exceeded that which was your limit before. The reason? Because you were putting certain pressures upon yourself to try to break a record, but that was all from within. The bull came and put more pressure from the outside, external pressure. And that forced you to do something that you never thought you could do. You discovered, in fact, that there are two limits to your ability. One which applies under normal conditions. One which is hidden until the pressure reveals it. That is the function of a test, of a nisayon, to provide the pressure, the spiritual adrenaline, to force you to discover a level which is far higher than the one you are accustomed to attaining. It brings out your higher self and your true greatness. And the purpose in this life is to actualize our potential in forging a complete, more encompassing relationship with God through using our abilities. Okay, so that's the normal explanation. You may have heard this before. The purpose of a nisayon, of a test, is to bring what latent abilities we have within us to the actual. Now, in my thinking, I always stop there. Rabbi Tatz is not satisfied with this, because he says, why is it called a nisayon, coming from the word nes, miracle? Because what is a miracle, really? A miracle is generally understood to be more beyond the teva, beyond the nature, beyond which is humanly possible. Now, in this example of the bull, that person who made the leap over the fence, he didn't do what was beyond humanly possible. He didn't even do what was beyond possibility for him. He just realized the extent of the possibilities. It stretched, because he had never been challenged to that degree before. So he discovered, you know, I can really leap higher than I thought. But it's still within the realm of teva, still within the realm of the possible, within the confines of nature. It's not miraculous. It would be extra special. It would be to the max. It would be to the fullest extent possible. But it's not beyond that. It's not within the realm of miracle. So he's not satisfied that a nisayon is only to actualize what potential lies within us. And so here's the next step. The next step is that we really have three levels. To take the bull analogy, he says, you thought you could only jump over the obstacle that you had tried before. You realized you could jump over the fence. But there is a limit. After a while, you won't be able to jump any higher, even if a minion of bulls comes attacking you. But is that really the extent that is possible? Sometimes a person finds himself in a situation that really is impossible. He doesn't have the ability to overcome it. It's just beyond his limit. He's been pushed to his max. He's become more than he thought, but he can't go any further. A real test, says Rabbi Tatz, is when a person is challenged by something that's impossible. A real test is impossible. It stresses a person beyond all possible limits. The feeling of the enormity of a real ordeal is accurate. This test is too much for me. That's correct. It is too much for you. It's more than your utmost effort could achieve. And you can't do it. But he can. You make the effort. Try to do the impossible. He will affect the result. In other words, a higher level of a nisayon is to attach yourself with all of your abilities and your limitations of all of your abilities to Hashem, who has infinite abilities, and with that connection to exceed the realm of possibility. When a person does this, not only does he grow tremendously, but he brings Hashem's presence into the world. Because if the world can look at that man and say, look what he did the impossible that could only have been possible with Hashem's help, then you have just publicized and sanctified the name of God. That's why it's called a nisayon, because it reveals the miraculous. It reveals God's hand. So this is a beautiful idea. This is just the basic concept. But I think that maybe this can apply in terms of understanding the type of experience that the Jewish people were having in the desert. They went to the land of Israel to see it. And sure enough, they saw a land that was impenetrable. They saw a people, an army, which was totally impossible to conquer. When the people came back and they said, we cannot do it, that was true. We cannot do it. There's no way in the world that we are going to be able to beat them. 100% accurate. No exaggeration at all. They weren't getting cold feet. They weren't imagining things. It was true. It was impossible. Kalev and Yehoshua said, we can do it. Not because we're strong, not because we think that we're mightier than you think we are, but because we are going with Hashem. We can do it with Him. This is where the people were at. They didn't want to live in the desert, because when you're in the desert, you're basically not the person. Hashem's revelation is so strong that you have, like the disciple of Rav says, you have no bechira, you have no choice. You're like forced into it. The mountain is literally pressing on your head. Accept the Torah or this will be the end of you. That's not a comfortable position to be in, because we are created for the purpose of making choices. That means having the flexibility to make that choice. So that wasn't comfortable. But believe me, it's not comfortable to look at something which is impossible to do and expect to do it. It's totally impossible. And that's why they were stuck between a rock and a hard place. We want to be ourselves, and yet we don't want to go into the impossible. And that was the challenge. The challenge is, are we going to go into the impossible situation, a situation where we cannot just stay back and say, Hashem, take care of it, because Hashem doesn't do that. It's not officially the Hanhaga Nisis. The land of Israel is not the place where you just sit back and Hashem does it for you. It's the situation where you go in and you attempt to do that which is impossible humanly to do. And then Hashem helps you. And Hashem will only help you after you start to do the impossible. If you don't attempt to do the impossible, He's not going to help you. That is the situation of the Jewish people, where we have to go into the Anhaga Tivis, into the natural realm. We have to be involved in that process, and we have to be faced with ordeals that are beyond our ability to conquer them, even after we reach the extent of our limits. And then nevertheless, Hashem allows us to succeed. That is the idea of being in the land of Israel. You know, in the book of Judges, there was always, it was like a roller coaster ride. The Jewish people came into the land of Israel, and first there was the era of Joshua. Under Joshua's tenure, the Jewish people were conquering the land. We still kind of had the grandfather clause of the Anhaga Nisis, of the miraculous order. Whereas Hashem would say, Jericho, I'll wipe them off. Just go there, blow some horns, and I'll drop the city to the ground. The next city is Ai. Just go to Ai, and I'll wipe them out too. They conquered 31 nations. It was basically pretty miraculous. In fact, after that, the Jewish people asked for a king. And Hashem said, it's too early to ask for a king, because we're still in the miraculous mode. But after that, they settled into the more natural mode. If you read the book of Judges, they were confronted with the hard choices of life. They were exposed to the temptations of the Canaanites, of their way of life, of their idolatry. They actually absorbed some of that into their own way of life and their thinking. They went away from the path of God. And then Hashem would send an enemy which would threaten them, and they felt that they were at the brink of disaster. They would cry out to Hashem, and then Hashem would send a judge who was like a righteous leader who would come in and miraculously defeat the enemy. That was the basic pattern of the Jewish life in the early years of the land of Israel. In other words, it wasn't like in the desert where they were constantly surrounded by the clouds of glory. They were left on their own to make their own choices. And they made bad choices. And then they found themselves threatened in the natural order. Sometimes they would just endure it because maybe it was still within their power, within the extent of their abilities. But they would eventually get to a point where it was too much. And then they would cry out to Hashem, and then the miracle would come. And that is the pattern. Hashem waits until the people, through their own hands, through their own choice, basically use up all they've got. He lets us make our choices, He gives us that flexibility. But eventually we get to a point where we have to do whatever we can, and then the miraculous has to set in. Yes?
You're saying the spies told the truth as they saw it. And if they were guilty of something, they were guilty of having a lack of faith.
Yeah, but that's too simplistic. You're right. But what does it mean they lack faith? It's one thing to say... I want to just clarify that the kind of faith that we're talking about is such a high level of faith, because they are put into a situation. We're not tested like this in our everyday lives, so we have to have faith on day to day. But how often are we faced with an ordeal that is literally beyond our ability to weather? That's a very high level of faith. Yes.
Whatever the commentary written by your sages or a rabbi, they talk here about malicious lies spread by the spies. I guess that's a traditional consensus about. So you can clarify that.
So you're saying you read in a commentary?
Right here, Artscroll.
What page?
Page 803, number 31, below the line.
Page 803.
The spies spread out among the people and spread malicious lies about the land.
Which note?
31.
We cannot ascend. Now the spies said explicitly what they had only suggested before. Earlier, after the assembled people had gone back to their tents, unsure whom to believe, the spies spread out among the people and spread malicious lies about the land, something they had not dared do in the presence of Moshe and Aaron. They claimed that the nature of the land and its produce is such that it can be tolerated only by unusually large and robust people. Ordinarily, people like the Israelites would not survive there. Yeah. Do you want to shed light on his question? Yeah.
So, I think that they, let's say they described there being giants and the food giants, and et cetera, and also they saw there was lots of death, ascending lots of funerals, so they wouldn't be noticed if they went through. So, in the way they present their discussion, they're saying the land killed the people. So, there's a lie, and we're like grasshoppers in their eyes, which is a lie also. That's their perception. They're normal-sized human beings, and then there were giants in the land of Canaan, but the way they said it was a lie. They said we were like grasshoppers in their eyes. They don't know that they were like grasshoppers in their eyes, and the land killed people. Yes, Hashem made a name, but the way they said it, they took us.
You're saying they were deluded?
Yeah, for their own purposes. They tried to bend what the reality was, and they made it so horrible that that's just my comment, my idea on it, because I think if you report something, to report in such a way, like that Lashon Hara, you could say in such a way that you could take a truth and make it evil. So make it into a lie. The land doesn't kill the people, and they weren't like grasshoppers in their eyes. They didn't ask the giants when they saw the giants in Hebron. I was reading a midrash with my boys, except that there was, in Hebron, there were giants, and they saw the spies go through, and the commenters, we were like grasshoppers in their eyes.
I want to respond to the question that was raised. First of all, we have to understand that there's many different insights and levels of understanding the Torah. And I may be offering an approach to it which is emphasizing a certain aspect that may not be emphasized by a different commentary. We have an expression that there are 70 different facets to every part of the Torah. So very often that will happen, especially in the learning of the Chumash. There's a lot of dynamics here, but I'm trying to address here is the essential fear. What are people afraid of? And the theme of Sefer Bamidbar is how we, the pratim, the individual members of the Jewish people, are to live in the reality of there being a God who forms the great klal, the great totality of creation. Hashem is not bound by any limitations. We are. How is it that we then can live and connect with the infinite if we are ourselves limited? And so one aspect that we discussed today is that, yes, we are limited, but in truth, we are much more empowered than we realize. And one level of ordeals is to bring out the greater extent of our abilities. That is one way in which we relate to God, is by stretching and becoming who we really can be. And the way that we do that is very often through ordeals, through things that challenge us and put pressure upon us and stress us. The Jewish approach is to walk with confidence and faith that God is administering these tests and will give us the strength to pass them. And that would mean that when we get through it, we will have developed more of our potential. But what Rabbi Tatz has added to it, and this is probably the level of intensity that we're talking about here in the Chumash, is that we're talking about a higher level of a test. We're talking about the Jewish people becoming inaugurated in the world of tests as a nation. And to see such a seemingly rebellious response to what was supposed to be our great calling, to go to the land of Israel, to see such a disheartenment, to see such a losing of hope, of all hope, it seems just to be difficult to understand. Great men should come back and say, we're not going to the land of Israel. How could they do such a thing? And with this insight from Rabbi Tatz, we see that they were lifted and they were put to a test that would scare anybody, because we're talking about the realm of impossibility. Impossibility. A lot of people will stand up to challenges if they can project in their mind, yeah, I think I could push myself to my limits, and I think I could accomplish it. I've never done it before, but I think I could. With God's help, I will accomplish it. But what happens when we're dealt with an ordeal that we cannot see ourselves doing? So we say to ourselves, wait a minute. If I couldn't do it, God wouldn't put me here. But He did. But I can't do it. And that's the second level. You can't do it by yourself. But you can accomplish the miraculous if you attach yourself to Hashem. So this does fit in with our theme of Klal and Prat. This fits into the theme of individuals with limitations attaching themselves to the infinite wisdom and power source of Hashem, and being able to bring about not only to accomplish challenges that heretofore were impossible, but by doing so, we bring Hashem's revelation into the world. And that is what we're here for, to connect with Hashem in this world. So I hope that this is a correct representation of the story, and I hope that it is inspiring. I know that it is inspiring to me, and hopefully we will be able to appreciate more the purposefulness of ordeals. Ordeals were put there to help us to grow, and even more so, ultimately, to reveal God into the world.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.